Could you maybe elaborate, I guess, or explain the phenomenon of B'nai Yisrael complaining over the course of this parsha? It's one thing kind of at the beginning we see them complain, and throughout they complain when they can't find water, and then another time when they can't find water at the end. I think probably the most perplexing episode is with the man, where they kind of completely lose belief. Moshe has performed all these miracles for them. He's saved them from Mitzrayim. He's given them water. He's done amazing things. And all of a sudden he says, don't go out on Shabbos. You can have double portion on Friday. Don't go out on Shabbos. And yet the people still go out on Shabbos to go find man. Like, what's going on? How come they didn't believe in this?
That's a tough question to answer. Well, how come they didn't, they did have Eros. I discussed this many times, that
it's not so matter of Eros.
It's not really, the truth of the matter is like, did you really, that's not really, I don't know if that's a good approach. How come this, how come that? I mean, you have to study the Torah. You have to study and go through and get a clear picture. I'm not saying that the question is not, it's a definitely a legitimate question, but you know, to just ask general questions like that, it's kind of hard. The basic premise is that it's an important point. The basic premise is that miracles themselves. I mean, you could ask this question after what they saw in Mitzrayim, and then they turn. What happens? For example, you could have asked this question before. Let me show you what I'm talking about. What happens at Mishalach? Let me just find the place. It says they left Mitzrayim beyond Rama with a high hand. That means that they didn't sneak out like thieves in the night. But that Moshe insisted that they're going to leave because there's a whole ambiguity. You know, did the Exodus take place at night or in the day? Because so, in one place it says, Hotia Hashem Mitzrayim Loila, that God took you out by night. But it's clear from the Psukim that that they left in the morning, because nobody was permitted to leave his house that night. And, Yom Teishcha. The Ramban explains that the sense is that the real, the two aspects to the Yetzias Mitzrayim. In other words, the freedom was achieved at night when they destroyed the firstborn, and the Egyptians were pushing them, imploring them to leave. So the Jews had achieved the state of freedom, but the actual Yetzias per se, I assume I suppose you could say the Geula took place at night. They were in a state of freedom, but the actual Yetzias from Mitzrayim itself, that they did in the morning. As an organized entity, as a nation, it says that they went beyond Rama. That they left with a high hand, organized. That is to say that they wouldn't go out, like thieves in the night, like just sneaking out, but, in a deliberate fashion. So then it says that the Mishalach, that God didn't take them by the way to push them. Kikarav, even though it was closed, Kiyama Kemp and Yinacham Ramos Muhammad Shabbat Rima. Alright, so then God caused them to go around Derech HaMidbar. The Chamushim, they went up with weapons. And it says, then the, I'm in Mishalach now, just scanning through the Pesukim there. They took the Atzmaus Yosef. Okay, fine. Okay. One second. Then in Yedalad, it goes back to Paro. So this is interesting, that God told Moshe to speak to the Bnei Israel, and that they should return and encamp in front of Pi Hachiros. Okay. it's the name of a place. Achiros. It's a reference to the Rashi says, Al Shem Shanafu Sham Bnei Chorin. They became free people. Aim Shnei Slayim. The Kufim. Alright, so that was like a pass, a mountain pass. It was called Piachiros. Bein Migdol Vein Hayam. Bnei Baal Tzafon. In front of, opposite Baal Tzafon. Nichol Sachnu Al Hayam. The Empire of Israel, the Vuchem Heim Ba'aretz. Sagra Lech Midbar. I said, Paro will say about the Jews that they're confused. And that they're like trapped inside of the Midbar. They can't move, they can't get out. Then the Chizaki is like Paro. Then all harden his heart, for Rada Vachrayim. And he'll chase after you. The covenant of Farah Vachalchelo, and I'll be glorified with through Paro and his army. The Yodim Mitzrayim Kinir Hashem. And Mitzrayim will know that I am Hashem. So it says Vayasid Cain, and they did that. What does it mean Vayasid Cain?
I don't know, I couldn't figure that out.
Does I'm that, sorry?
I couldn't figure out, does that mean that Egypt did that eventually?
Yeah, Vayasid Cain. Well, take a look at Rashi.
Hey.
This all goes back to Dabel B'nai Yisrael.
Wholeheartedly, supposedly.
Yeah, Vahagat Shifchan. This is to speak their praises. Now, hold on a second. I haven't taped any of this yet. I'm just going to start now. So I may be repeating myself a little bit. Yeah, we're doing B'Shalach. That's after the Jews left Mitzrayim. So, in Perek Yudalad, it says that God spoke to Moshe to speak to the Bnei Israel. The Yoshuvim turned back from the position that they were in and to camp before a mountain pass called Piachiros, which was opposite Baal Tzafon. That was one of the idols that the Egyptians worshipped. And it was close to the sea, to the Red Sea, Al Hayam. And the purpose of this was to ensnare Paro. So God was commanding Moshe to tell the Jews to actually put themselves in a dangerous position, to go back towards a position which would make them vulnerable to the attack of Paro, and to create the impression that they were lost. Paro will say that they're confused, Nevuchadnezzar Ba'aretz, they're perplexed, they're confused, Sagar Aleihem HaMidbar, that they're sort of locked into the Midbar. It's basically sometimes the person gets lost sometimes in like a maze, and everywhere you turn, you're confused, you can't get out of the situation. Turning, sometimes a person could be, on a hike in a mountain, and he's looking for the trail and tries different approaches and realizes that he's completely lost, and he's lost his bearings. That's the sense of Sagar Aleihem HaMidbar, that they've lost their bearings and they just can't move. Then it says the Chizaki is like Paro, that God will harden his heart, the Radav Achareihem, and he'll chase after them, and God is saying that he'll be glorified through Paro. What is it? And all of his army. And the Yadu Mitzrayim, Kenir Hashem. And Mitzrayim will know that I am God. What does that mean that I'll be glorified through Paro? Fellas, just pause for a second. What does that mean? If you could be a little bit louder or closer to the phone, would help me. Go ahead.
Everybody would see that Egypt was destroyed. Like, Egypt was the biggest nation in the world at that time. So everyone asked the question, how did they how did they get destroyed? So
yeah.
The answer would be God. The God of the Jews.
True.
So that would that be glorifying Hashem?
Yeah, that's true. But that's true. There's another element though, to that. Maybe that you mean, but you're not spelling it out. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi comments on that. Kishakadosh Baruch Hu misnakim bershayim, and God avenges the wicked. Shemo misgadel umiskaved. His name is magnified and glorified. And he quotes the source in Yecheskel, viskadalti viskadashti vidogati. And that's in conjunction with the idea that God destroys the wicked, which means to say that it's not just a means by which God is made known, because there can be many avenues by which God's existence can be made known, but this is, has a special significance, because the way the person is constructed, there's an element of denial. Each person has a certain element of denial, and there is a tendency in mankind to deny God when the wicked are in command. When those who deny God, basically like Amalek, when they take over and they have control, so this has the effect. So people deny that there's anything outside of the physical, anything outside of the physical universe. Because they say that the only thing that matters is the physical might. They run the world, and there's really no justice in the world. That's the whole idea of Amalek. So when God destroys the Rishayim, it teaches mankind a lesson. Not only that the existence of God, but that the purpose of God in this world, that God relates to this world, and the objective of God's relationship to the world is that people should live in a certain kind of a way, in a manner of justice. So this is always a challenge. People always question that. Is there any justice in the world? Is it just random? Is there any significance? And so on and so forth. So as long as there's the triumph of Rishayim, so that reinforces the feeling of people that that's all that matters. It's just might makes right. It's just a mechanistic situation. So that's the meaning over here, v'kavda v'paro, that there's a special Kiddush Hashem that comes into being with the destruction of the Rishayim. So basically, that's why the Jews were commanded to go back. But bear in mind that in doing so, this would put them in a vulnerable position. So the Pasuk then says, Vayasuchein, that the Jews complied. They complied with this. Now why does that have to tell us that they complied with this? So Rashi says, Vahagit Shifchan, this is to speak their praises. This was praiseworthy. Shesham will call Moshe, that they listened to the voice of Moshe, Velo Amru, and they didn't say, Heich Niskarev El Rotfenu, how can we draw closer to our pursuers? Anu Tzrichim Livroach, we have to run away. Elo Amru, but they said, Ein Lanu El Adivrei Ben Amram, all we have to go by are the words of Ben Amram, that is to say, the words of Moshe. Now let's pause for a second. So what do we see over here? It's significant in light of what happened after that.
They had full faith.
Huh?
They had full faith in Moshe.
I'm sorry, speak louder.
They had full faith in Moshe?
Yeah, apparently they reached a high level. Faith. I don't like the word faith.
Not faith.
A certain confidence, right.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I just said the word. You know, we should be a little more careful. Okay, so faith is associated with Kadosh Baruch Hu. But I know what you mean, it's all right. This is Shifchan. According to Rashi, this is describing the praise of the Jews. It would seem that they had reached a high level. That is to say that from an emotional standpoint, if you put yourself in that situation, the natural emotion is to go the other direction. Of course, part of the whole idea of Yadus in terms of human perfection is that a person just doesn't operate in accordance with his natural emotion. Because the natural emotion that a person feels in virtually every situation, very rarely is it in line with the object of truth. one of the challenges is for a person to recognize that and to be able to put it aside and to utilize a different element of the psyche to analyze it from the standpoint of knowledge and objectivity. So apparently in this situation, where the emotions are very, very powerful, and they would have dictated that a person should keep running, and certainly not to go back towards the line of fire, they did so, because they were on a high level, and they recognized that that they had to operate in accordance with the truth, and Moshe Rabbeinu was the Navi Hashem. And even though what he was saying went contrary to their emotions, that's what they should do. So this is praiseworthy. Now, in light of that, let's see what happens after that. Okay, then you have hey. Then it says that it was told to Pharaoh that Kibaracham, that the nation had ran away. That's interesting in its own right. Sounds strange. What do you mean it was told to him that they had run away? He was the one that came and gave the order. According to Rashi, it was personally he came after Moshe and Aaron. Whether it's literally true that he ran personally after them, which is not difficult to accept given the Torah of Makas Bechoros, but clearly it was with his knowledge, with his order that the Jews had left. So on the surface, the pasuk seems strange that it was told to him, and then suddenly he doesn't know, and somebody had to report to him that the Jews had escaped. So what's the meaning of that pasuk?
Does it mean that they all expected the Jews to come back after 3 days, because that was like what they had said before? Earlier, they said that they just wanted to go out to the desert for 3 days, and now it's been more than 3 days. So now they're saying if they fled, they just totally run off. Did you hear my answer?
No.
I said that maybe he did.
Maybe what?
He was under the impression that they were kind of going to come back after 3 days.
Yeah, you have to assume that. I mean, all the Mepharshim point that out.
So then when they, you know, after like, I don't know, more than 3 days, then they were like, okay, well, the Jews aren't coming back.
Yeah, Rashi, yeah. You have to deduce that up to this point, Pharaoh thought that the Jews were simply leaving according to the original demand of Moshe to journey for 3 days in the wilderness and then to worship God, and that they were going to return. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi makes this point. Ikturin Shalachimahem says that the Pharaoh sent a spy along with them. And once 3 days arrived that they had established that they would worship in return, and he saw that they weren't returning to Mitzrayim, so he came and he told Pharaoh on the fourth day. Then, Rashi says, on the fifth and on the sixth, he chased after them. And on the night of the seventh, they were drowned in the sea. And Rashi gives an account, a step-by-step account, of the 7 days that they, from the time they left, until the Egyptians were drowned in the Yamsuf. And that was the Shvi Shel Pesach. That was the seventh day of Pesach. And that's the reason why we have the minhag to read the Shira on the seventh day of Pesach. But all the Mepharshim say the same idea. For example, you have in Ezra, by you guys, it was told, Ki ein holchim ki im lebroach. It was told to him that they're not leaving except to run away. The Sforno says the same thing. That Pharaoh was told that they were not going in a straight path. As they had implied, they're just going to go a distance. That all they needed was a space to separate themselves from Egypt for 3 days. And they weren't going in that kind of a straight path, but they were going in a circuitous path in the custom of those who are seeking to escape. So at this point in time, apparently, Pharaoh expected that they would return. Then it says that he had a change of heart. Then it says that the Paro by Hapech Levach Paro Savada Elaam, and the Paro and his servants had a change of heart regarding people, and they said, Mazot Osinu, what have we done? Kishilachnu as Yisrael Me'avdenu, that we sent the Jews away from serving us. I don't know. I mean, this really wasn't my. I'm just thinking of a question over here. I'm just thinking, I don't know if I'm going to deal with it. When you learn Chumash, it's like you learn Gemara, you know, like you have to analyze it, and you come with a lot of questions, which is good, because that gives you a basis. Otherwise, it's just like a lot of things happening, you know, you don't really have any grip. The avenue to getting to the ideas and appreciating the commentaries is through the questions, but you have too many questions. You can't always stop at that point and answer every question until you go to the next puzzle. But I think it's a good idea to take note of the questions and you continue. Alright. I just want to take note of a question which is occurring to me. It seems to me, at least superficially, that there's a little bit of a problem in the pasuk over here. Because if indeed we're saying that Paro expected them to return, and then he found out that they were escaping, so then why would it be Vayehapech Levav Paro? What was the change of heart? There was no change of heart involved. There was new information. And what does it mean? And they said, Mazos Asinu. Then I'm not sure. Perhaps that could be understood as, now it was a realization that they had been tricked, and that it wasn't just to serve God that they had left, but that they were freeing themselves from the enslavement. So then I understand. But the changing of the heart, I'm not quite sure what the pshat is at this point. Okay. Alright. Again, I just take note of it, so you have something to think about, but I'm not going to make a big deal out of it and stop everything right now. Okay? I'm saying these things to try and convey methodology. You have to notice, you know, one of the main questions and so on and so forth, and then you also have side questions, perhaps smaller questions, which you take note of. And eventually you'll see, when you open up and understand it in a general way, you'll be able to go back and tie everything up. Everything should fit together. Okay. So anyway, we'll continue. Then it says that he prepared the chariots and he took his nation. Then it describes all of the choice chariots and all of the Rechav Mitzrayim, a massive army and officers. So he gathered together pretty much the entire nation. Then it says that God hardened his heart. God hardened his heart. And he chased after the Bnei Israel. And here it says, the Bnei Israel yotzim biyad rama. But the Bnei Israel had gone out with a high hand. Interesting to note, what's the connection in this context? It's interesting to note, over here, what is the connection of the fact that they had gone out beyond Rama? The Ebenezer points out, Lo Yatsu Kidmus Borchim. They had not left like people who are trying to run away, to escape. V'hoi Imam Kokwe HaMuchama. They had with them all the weapons of war. And I don't know why, so why is it mentioned in this context? I'm not sure. Okay. And now what happens next? What happens next? Let's continue the description. So it says that the Mitzrayim chased after them. And they caught them encamping by the Yam, by the sea. Mentions again all of the horses, the chariots, the army of Paro. By Piachiros was made Baal Pathon. Then it says Uparo Hikriv, and Paro drew close. By Yisu Bnei Yisrael Atay Nehem, and Bnei Yisrael lifted their eyes. Hine Mitzrayim Nosea Acharehem. And behold, the Egyptians were traveling after them. By Yiru Ma'od, and they were greatly afraid. By Yitaku Bnei Yisrael El Arosham. And the Bnei Yisrael cried out to God. Vayomer El Moshe, and they said to Moshe, Hamibli ain't tvarim in the Mitzrayim. Are there not any graves in the Mitzrayim? V'tachtonu lomos b'midbar, that you took us to die in the midbar, in the wilderness. Mazos asis alanu, what is this that you've done to us? Lo'tzianu mi Mitzrayim, to take us out of Egypt. Haloza davar, asher dibarnu ei lechav in the Mitzrayim lemor. Is this not what we said to you in Egypt? Hadami menu v'navdas Mitzrayim. Leave us alone, and we'll serve the Egyptians. That is where we're okay. We're satisfied. We prefer it. Yitov lanu avodas Mitzrayim, because it's better for us to serve Mitzrayim mimusena b'midbar, as opposed to dying in the wilderness. Now, before we go to the answer of Moshe Rabbeinu, let's pause and ask some questions here. Who was that? Ben asked the question originally about attacking the Jews. Complain?
Yeah.
Was that Ben?
Yeah.
All right, so, I went into this because this seems to be the first instance of this phenomenon. Am I wrong? Isn't this the same thing? You could have asked your question over here, could you not have? Repeat it. I'm asking you guys to know what the question is.
Ben, is this the same question that you had before right here? Like, could you ask the same question here?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So the question, state the question for everybody then. I mean, especially in light of Rashi, that the Jews had reached that Madrega where they voluntarily went back into the line of fire. So what happened? They knew that they were going back into the line of fire, so what took place? All of a sudden, they're complaining, in spite of all the miracles. That's the question. The question is, what's at play? Well, what happened to the Jews? That they were complaining. Rebelling, actually, against Moshe. We just read that Vayasuchein, the Shevach of the Jews, the praise, that in spite of the fact that it was contrary to their emotions, in spite of the fact that it was dangerous, they listened to Moshe Rabbeinu. They accepted the fact that he was the Navi, and they based themselves on what he told them to do. So they voluntarily put themselves into the line of fire. So what happened now? Once they saw the Mitzrayim coming after them.
Well,
yeah.
It could be like seeing a whole army, like a huge army. It's like a different kind of thing than the situation they were in before. Like before they were, I mean, before they were enslaved, so they were afraid in that sense, and they were in the desert. But it seems to me that it would be more frightening to have like a whole army chasing you down, as opposed to being in the wilderness. Because in the wilderness you're like, oh well, you know, I can survive in the wilderness with some help of God and stuff like that. But when you see like a huge army rushing towards you, just I guess. In that moment, it's very frightening, and you may lose your cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. Good. There's an interesting Rashi on by Yisu Bnei Yisrael as they Nehem. I think there is one anyway. Say Acharehem.
It's in Pesach.
An interesting Rashi on Nosea Achareim. Rashi says, that is to say, traveling after them, pursuing them. So Rashi says, Belei Vechad, with one heart, Ki Ish Echad, as one person. Davar Acher, another interpretation. Hine Mitzrayim Nosei Achareihem. And behold, Egypt was pursuing them. Ra'u Sar Shel Mitzrayim. They saw the master of Mitzrayim, Noseya Min HaShamayim, traveling forth from the heaven, Lazal Mitzrayim, to help Mitzrayim. Of course, the question is, what does that mean? How are we to understand something like that? What's the concept over here? Are we talking about a literal, that they actually saw something flying from the sky? How are we to understand that? And if indeed that's the case, which is very difficult to take it that way, if they actually saw something coming down from heaven to help the Egyptians, so then you can't blame them for any kind of reaction. But it's impossible to understand it that way. What's the concept?
Is it a reference to the star, the evil star that Rashi pointed out earlier, and I think it was Vayera?
Well, I mean, I'm not talking about the, I'm not talking about that. Rashi, no evil stars. I mean, that also is metaphorical. But what does that have to do with this?
Oh, that was metaphorical. Okay.
This is clear.
That was something that was supposedly on, that was like on Egypt's side. That was like going to help them out. That was like bad for the Jews.
Yeah, I know, right. That's something else. Whatever it means. Look, this is, separate.
Okay. Oh, one thing is, forget it.
Go ahead. It's a metaphor. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It's a metaphor.
Yeah.
I would say it's clearly connected to the poem shot. This is clearly a metaphor, and it's clearly connected to the poem shot. Generally speaking, the Midrashim are expansions of the poem shot. They have to fit in. It's not completely separate. So, in order to understand this, the concept that they saw them b'lev echad, a certain type of a unity, ki'ish echad, that's the poem shot that Rashi gives, the triumph. They witnessed the entire nation with a certain sense of purpose and completely organized to achieve a certain objective. This, I would say, is a further expansion of that in a midrashic level, a metaphor. See, what is the sar of the triumph? What is the
It's interesting though, because it says this is davar acher, so it seems like the two pshatim is not the second one is not just a restatement of the first one.
I know, I agree, because I don't think it means davar acher. Sometimes can mean another flame shot.
Okay.
Davar acher means another idea. Sometimes you could have two different possibilities in terms of what the flame shot is, but the second one can't be the flame shot. They didn't see anything coming out of the sky.
Right, but if you interpret the second one like the first one, what's the difference between the two?
What's the difference between the two?
Yeah. Like, why say both? Why don't say one? Either way.
No, because the plame shot is a description of the plame shot is a description of what they saw physically. The Torah is describing. There's a plame shot. There's a narrative. There's a text. This is what happens. Now the Medrash is telling you the psychological significance of what happened. That's the Devar Achar.
Okay.
Yeah. But always remember that they're pshuto.
Well, who's the officer of Mitzrayim? Who's the star shel Mitzrayim?
Yeah, well, okay. This requires some imagination. That's why I'm giving you some time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This will give you a tremendous insight. I can't do it all today. We'll have to continue. But the whole time, I have a shiur on the significance of the Shira. You know, the ideas of the Shira. But it'll give you a basis to approach the whole concept of the Shira. Maybe you can work on that also over the break. Just in general, why is that so significant? I mean, that they made a Shira about that particular miracle, that the Egyptians were destroyed. I mean, there were other miracles. Of course, it was a great miracle, not to deny, but there were other great miracles. And there was no Shira. Moreover, it seems on the surface that the objective of the Shira is to glorify the destruction destruction. And God, Hashem Ishmuchama, and so on and so forth, which seems to be contrary. That's not we're not pacifists. We recognize it's a necessity, but there's a lot of ambivalence over there too. It says that the Malchei HaSharif wanted to sing Shira and God rebuked them. He said there's issues. I'm not taking it up systematically now. I'm just saying this in terms of paving the way. But I think that this over here will give you a basis for the approach. Yeah. Anyone want to speak? I'm not here telling you now to answer the things about the Shira or to analyze it. I'm just I just made that comment. Go ahead.
The Sahar Shal Mitzrayim is like Egypt's identity?
Yeah, good. Expand on that.
Well, that would fit in with the first shot, because like the whole nation was like an officer is. I was thinking an officer is one who controls like a group of people. He's kind of like organizes them and he executes a lot of the stuff, kind of, almost like a general, I guess. So when it says that they saw the officer of Mitzrayim, it doesn't mean that they saw one person. It means that they saw what their motivating force was, what was really behind them.
What? Which was?
I'm not exactly sure. I can't figure out the second part.
You're right on the right track.
The second part, I have no idea what the second half of that Rosh is talking about.
The Devaracha, you mean?
No. The Nosei Amir Shemayim Lahazar Mili
Tzrayim. Yeah. Again, you have to use your imagination. A little bit, you know. All right, if you want a few more seconds, fellas, go ahead.
One idea.
Go ahead.
When it says Shemayim, does it mean like, like when we say that someone has their head in the clouds? Is that possible?
What does that mean? What do you mean in this context?
Like, that would mean like fantasy.
Possibly. That's not a bad thought. Good.
Because...
Tie it in. That's good.
Because,
It is a fantasy.
Because they needed some way of... Oh, I see. They needed some way of, like, turning after Yisrael and going after them again. Because after what happened to them. They needed some way to rationalize what happened to them. But it would be very, very hard for a whole nation to do that unless they had some real crazy ideology.
Yeah, but you see, here it's saying that this is something that the Jews thought. This was something in the mind of the Jews. What was it? What is the Sahar of Mitzrayim in the mind of the Jews? It's not trying to explain to us what gave the Egyptians. Perhaps it works for the Egyptians as well. That is true.
Okay.
But here we're not really concerned with the Egyptians. We're concerned... But the Jews perceived something, and this is the cause of their collapse. They sort of collapsed. A complete collapse. To the extent that they couldn't do anything, they turned against Moshe, they screamed out to God. Whether that screaming was a rational tefillah, or whether it was just screaming, is the question. But, I mean, they clearly turned against Moshe Rabbeinu. And they thought they were lost. They said, we would have been better off slaves rather than being destroyed in the wilderness. So they completely lost... their so-called, faith or whatever, confidence in Moshe Rabbeinu was completely gone. I pointed it out. This whole thing started with a vote of confidence in Moshe. And now they've lost it. And Rashi here, I believe, is trying to give you the explanation. This is the link. And this is a very, very crucial point over here. It's very, very crucial with the whole idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim. This point over here is a fundamental to your thought. It's amazing. It's the kind of thing you probably would have skipped over.
Well, is it possible to say that they were worried that God would now be on Mitzrayim's side for some reason?
Why would they think that? And what did they see? They saw something. And this something, that's the plank shot. And this something triggered off another thing that they saw, which was Samaracha.
Well, they didn't think that Mitzrayim would come after them. Right?
I don't know whether they thought that or not.
Okay, but I would say that they expected to...
If they didn't think that, then that's difficult to say that they didn't think that was a possibility, because there was the Shema. If they're following Moshe, in spite of the fact that he's telling them to do something dangerous, but if, according to you, they didn't think it was dangerous because they didn't think Mitzrayim was coming after them, then it's not really a Shema. I would say that they didn't know, but they were prepared. The Ebnei Yisrael Yotze Biyad Rava.
Yeah.
Perhaps the reason for saying the Yad Rama Yotzim B'Yad Rama at this point is to illustrate the change, that there was a change in attitude, that when they left with a certain confidence. And that was sustained at that point when they listened to Moshe, Vayasuchay. But as a result of what occurred here, they suffered a certain type of a regression, a setback. And we have to try and understand the nature of that setback because it's very crucial. Now, the way it unfolds is that they saw a visual sight, which was the unified Egyptian nation, the army, everybody with a tremendous sense of purpose coming after them. One second.
Okay,
Rabbi? What?
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm just coughing, you know. I would take a second, Candy, but then it's going to sound bad on the tape. Hold on. She says the Davar Achar, that is, that they saw the Sar Shel Mitzrayim. It's metaphorical. It means to say that this was the psychological effect of what they had seen visually. The two things are not disconnected. They're clearly connected. But this is extremely significant in providing us with an understanding of what takes place over here. And it's an introduction to the tremendous significance of the Kriyat Yamsa, and then the Shiva that follows. Okay, I'm just trying to set it up. Guys, good turn.
Of Egypt, is that like the officer that was over them before?
What do you mean, the physical officer?
No, not the same guy. But I mean, like in Egypt, they had officers that were appointed over them when they were slaves. So it's like when they saw this army, it was like were they regressing back into their slave mentality? So they're like, oh,
yeah,
here come our masters again.
Yeah, but what's the key element in the slave mentality? It's a good point. All right, so I'm going to tell you what. Actually, I chased that shot on this years ago, but I'm going to say it in my own way. You know, again, I don't want to like. I gave a shear on this, which was similar. I just didn't. The ideas were similar, but I didn't, when I gave it, I didn't attach it to the idea of Tsar Shel Mitzrayim. Literally, Jake came along and gave a share on this area, and he attached it to the idea of Tsar Shel Mitzrayim. All right?
Yeah.
All right, so let me just explain. The idea of Tsar Shel Mitzrayim, I'm basing myself on a shot that Rabbi Chait gave years ago, and I have tapes on the whole area of the Shira, the significance of the Shira. It's interesting, both of us gave Shira on this topic, and I think the ideas are pretty similar. Although I didn't base myself on the idea of the Sar Shel Mitzrayim. But, that is, I based myself on the idea, but it wasn't connected to the Pshat and Rashi. The Sar Shel Mitzrayim is very, very significant. It represents a certain type of a psychological phenomenon, which is the essence of an enslaved people. And that is the image that every dictator, every cruel system that tries to impose its might bases itself on a certain phenomenon. And that is the deification of the image of human power, the image of human might. And that's the whole battle of mankind in order to free itself from the overestimation of the human force, of human power. And because that becomes an obstacle to the recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what causes the tremendous fear of people. And the main theme, major theme in the Tzilos, to break down this idea, to recognize that man is weak. That no matter how powerful he may appear, it's just a figment of your imagination. In reality, he's very, very weak. And the real cause of what occurs in this universe is the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I tied this in, for example, you see this phenomenon operative in Nazi Germany. The Nazis tried to create this myth of the super race, And it's a very powerful psychological force. But the truth is that people bought into it. And so this myth itself was a major factor in intimidating the other nations, and they were able to take over other countries in matters of days because people were so frightened. And that was based upon the projection that overestimation, that the deification, investing the idea of human might with a certain type of a divine power. And to a certain extent, the Jews partook of this to a certain extent. That's how, one of the reasons why, even in the concentration camps, historians have pointed out that, relatively speaking, there weren't that many Germans there to control them. And had they made an uprising, in fact, in certain places they did, then they would have been able to perhaps overcome them. But they were able to rule with the sense of fear, intimidation, that they're a master race and there's nothing you can do against them. It's interesting that if you read the description of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, after they had pretty much decimated the Warsaw Ghetto, removed most of the Jews, so there was only a remnant left. Essentially, it was teenagers and young people, and they decided to fight. And they initiated a revolt. And you read the descriptions, they knew that it was hopeless, that they were going to die anyway, but they decided that they'd rather die fighting. And it's amazing the type of resistance that they put up. They held the German army at bay. They had to send in all kinds of reinforcements, and eventually they were just blowing up one building after another. This ferocity of the resistance. But when they describe it at first, what was amazing is that they sent in their tanks. The Germans thought it would be a cakewalk. It would be nothing. And the first fighters, they ran out and they opened up a tank and threw in a Molotov cocktail and blew up a tank. And they described how the Germans were screaming in agony and torture, running away. When they saw that, it broke down the whole myth of German superiority, that they're humans like anyone else, and they saw them in a state of tremendous fear and screaming and horror, and this broke down the myth. And when that myth is broken down, it gave them a tremendous courage. So you see that this myth of human might and the deification of human power is a paralyzing thing. And this is a important element in understanding what the significance of the Kriyat Yom Suf and the whole idea of Hashemish Melchama, that the ultimate power is the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And to break down, that's why you see that when the Jewish army goes out to battle, the Kohen has to read Psukim to them. It mentions that they'll come out against you with all these different devices and horses and making all kinds of noises and trying to intimidate you. And the methodology that we use to combat that is not to fall into the same mode of thinking. Right? Jay pointed to that every other nation seeks to oppose this type of thing by building up their own psyche. And basically, they're using the same method, but they're trying to apply it to themselves. To try and attach that emotion of superiority, of supremacy to themselves. And in Yadus, we don't do that. We don't make use of that mechanism, which is false, but it's a recognition that the only reality is the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that it's to break down the myth of human might. So what happened over here was that they looked up and they saw the Egyptian nation. And when they saw them in that position, arrayed, unified, organized, so it brought to mind the Sar Shel Mitzrayim. That's the myth, the image, that sense of being unbeatable. And that's what caused them to become paralyzed, to lose all of their courage. They had not yet been freed from that emotion, which is, I guess, it's understandable. I mean, obviously, they had been enslaved to the Egyptians, and there's always that tendency of overestimation of the oppressor. But that's basically what takes place over here. This was now to create the stage the Jews were in this state and they were completely paralyzed to the extent that they couldn't, at this point in time, they really couldn't even do battle. Because another question that I raised, when I took up the issue of the Shira, one of the questions was that, in this case, you see that the Jews were not commanded to fight. That's also interesting. Because Moshe says, Hashem yilachim lachem, God will fight for you, v'atem tacharishon. And here too, by Yom Moshe Allah, Moshe said to the people, Al tiro, don't be afraid, it's yatzvu ru'u. That's Yeshua HaRashem. Stand up and see, take note of the Yeshua HaRashem. That is to say, you're in this situation where on the one hand you're overcome by this emotion, this overestimation of the human. Yeah, fine. And then now watch and see the Yeshua HaRashem. That the real Yeshua, the real power is Hashem, and that that everything that you attribute to the mystery is just a figment of your imagination. You have to free yourself from that emotion. What God will do, for as you see them today, that's it, they're finished. And that will show you that this is just a figment of your imagination. So, I raised the question that we see at the end of Mishalach, basically, the same parsha. It's just a short amount of time later, it's a matter of weeks, and the Jews are attacked by Amalek. And this time, Moshe tells Yoshua, "Bachar lachem anashim, to choose men and to fight a war against Amalek." So they were capable of fighting. All right, so we have to understand Moshe Rabbeinu when he was with Spalo, when they saw him being with Spalo, and they were encouraged, and so on and so forth. But at that point in time, they were able to fight. Here, they weren't able to fight. So what's the cause of this transformation? So it seems to me that this is a major factor. At this point in time, they still were under the sway. They were smitten by that emotion of the overestimation, the deification of human might. And that's what happened over here when they saw Mitzrayim chasing after them. It aroused that emotion. And when that emotion takes hold, then you're finished. You're paralyzed. And apparently the command to them was to... They didn't have to fight, Hashem yilachim lachem. But his yatzu, to gain control over themselves to the extent that they can perceive the real meaning, not just the destruction of the Mitzrayim. Because if that's the case, so God could have destroyed the Mitzrayim, and there's no point in them seeing. It wasn't just to destroy the Mitzrayim, but they had an obligation too, that they should see the Yeshua Hashem. See that, and to utilize that idea in order to uproot completely this falsification, this tendency in mankind. It's a tendency, it's a very powerful tendency. And it keeps repeating itself throughout history. Every time there's a new empire, there's a new force, there's a new power, everybody projects the same thing. And you see that even on a smaller plane, where it becomes really absurd, you know, with regard to sports heroes and figures and legends and greatness, and to try and, you know, always looking for this Superman. The Superman phenomenon to project divine powers onto the human. That expressed itself in every area of the culture, even though it's absurd in with regard to individuals, sports heroes, legends, and teams, and things of that sort. People are always looking for something on which to project this emotion. So that's the pshat. That's what takes place over here. And in general, to just give a general orientation towards the question, we're not taking it up in specific cases. We see over here that there was a transformation, that the miracles that they had witnessed, the destruction of Mitzrayim, the plagues, and the complete transformation of their situation from the time that Moshe Rabbeinu had come. And at first it was a tremendous setback, and then in spite of that, tremendous change, and the complete... the destruction of the Mitzrayim and the fact that they gave them all of their gold and silver and they drove them out of the land, so to speak. All of this, all the miracles in and of themselves do not transform a person. Witnessing the greatest miracles are not enough in and of itself. in the case, for example, the first case after, even after the Kriya Shamsa, even after the destruction of the Mitzvah, given what we've just discussed, and that this was the most powerful, most paralyzing emotion, and yet they went through the experience and they sang Shira. So one would have thought that, okay, so now we've resolved all questions, we've resolved all difficulties, and there shouldn't be any further problems, and yet we see that they went 3 days, and they didn't find water, and then they come to Mara. That's the incident before the month. And the waters were bitter, so they start complaining already. And that story should be studied. Perhaps we'll take that up next time. Very, very significant. The whole idea over there that that God cured the waters, cured the bitter with the bitter, with the tree, which is bitter. It's a very important concept. And we'll have to continue. But the point I'd like to make, though, is you see that they went 3 days without water. And the Chazal say that that really is a reference to Torah. Of course, literally, they didn't find water, but it means that they also were not Osek in Torah. And the general idea is that any miracle that a person sees, no matter how persuasive it is, will not be effective in the long run unless a person incorporates it and works on his emotions and overcomes his emotions. And if a person does not overcome the emotions and redirect them, and on an ongoing basis, on a daily basis, on an ongoing basis, is connected to the world of truth and reality, then he's just basically living an emotionalistic life. Then the emotions will find an outlet, and they'll find an outlet. They'll find the problem. They'll find the complaint, and then whatever he saw will be forgotten. That doesn't mean he'll forget it in the sense he won't remember it, but he'll distort that, the significance. That was a different situation, and that's what God wanted then, but now this can't be the correct situation. That is not a problem. We make a mistake because we just assume that if we saw these things, there's no way we could ever sin. That's really a result of the fact that we don't have true self-knowledge. That is no protection from sin. The witnessing of great miracles is not a protection from sin. The question is a person living on the emotionalistic level, or is he living on the level of truth, on the intellectual level? He's constantly involved in a state of battling the emotions and keeping them under control, and living in accordance with the objective truth. That's the Mochemes Achayim. And it's not a question, one cannot ask that question, as to how is it possible that they witnessed these miracles and then proceeded to complain. Because that has to do with something completely different. The purpose of the miracles were, as the Rambam says, that they were necessary at the time in order to effectuate certain needs, certain objectives. Of course, a Chacham can learn a tremendous amount from it. But it depends upon how the person decides to live his life. If he's living a life of chachma, so then of course all of these miracles are vital. But then it's not the miracles. Then it's because the miracles are just simply an avenue to direct them towards the source of chachma, towards Torah. And the truth is that Torah is really based upon Sinai. It's not based upon the other miracles. It's based upon the ultimate demonstration. But even Sinai itself is not going to have any effect upon a person if he's not living a life of chachma. And on that basis, you can understand the deviations. To the extent that people are not perfected, then the emotions are going to search for an outlet, and they're going to find outlets, and they're going to be involved in complaining. They're always involved in the miraculous phenomena which God performed for the Bnei Israel did not free them from the obligation of fighting the Mochemes Achayim. Okay, guys, I think we'll conclude here.
Wait, can I ask a question?
Yeah. All right.
So what does it mean? What does Rashi mean when he says "Nosem Yer Shemayim Lazarim Mitzrayim"?
Yeah, that's what it means. That the "Nosem Yer Shemayim" means that they you know, like they deification.
Oh.
They saw it. They saw.
Oh,
it's as if they saw something from heaven. You follow?
Yeah.
It's metaphorical.
All right,
guys, have a great vacation.
Thanks. You too, Rabbi.
Have a good Shabbos. Have a good Shabbos, right. And we'll have a call tomorrow.
Yeah, we're trying to give a call tomorrow.
All right.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.